One of the things that I think people who grew up inside of Christianity take for granted about it is how different it is and how God invites his people to interact with him. It's unique in Christianity and Judaism in that all throughout the scriptures, you see people arguing with God. And it's not just allowed, it's kind of like held up as a prayer because it allows God. It's the kind of arguing with God that allows God to be God and us to be humans. That's the kind of arguing that God invites. And this is unique in the Jewish and Christian faith. But there is one time somebody argued with God and did not know it. It is not a legend. It is a fact of history. And in fact, it's history I wear around my neck. I have this coin minted by the man who argued with God. His name is Pontius Pilate, and I wear it because for a while there was this weird thing in culture where people were arguing that Jesus of Nazareth wasn't even a real historical figure. It only lasted about 10 years, but it was a thing that was really big on the internet. And I wear this because this isn't a myth, it's not a legend, it's history. Pontius Pilate was the fifth governor of Judea who served under Tiberius Caesar from the years 26 to 36 AD, and all the history of the ancient world that we have, history done by the enemies and opponents of Christianity, and history done by Christians themselves, says Jesus of Nazareth was crucified under the reign of Pontius Pilate. In other words, this did not happen in Narnia. It did not happen in a galaxy far, far away. It happened in our world full of blood, sweat, and tears. And today, as we look at this story, I want you to put yourself in it because it really is good news. Jesus, all throughout the Gospel of John, has been incredibly loving and compassionate, but he's also had enemies, specifically people who had problem with all his love and compassionate, the religious leaders of Judaism at the time. And it's because of these confrontations that ultimately we get to this story where there's this unholy alliance between the Jewish religious leaders and the Roman government as they bring him to Pilate. Now, Pilate in the Gospel of John does not get an introduction. To the first century Jews, he would not have needed one because he was hated by them and he hated them. He was only known today, Pilate's only known for this one story in history, but he wanted to be known for so much more. When he got his appointment to this, what he would consider the armpit of the world, he was made governor over two-thirds of Israel, and his whole job was to keep the peace and keep bringing in the taxes. The problem was Jews were notoriously difficult to be occupied by enemy empires. They did not like it. They did not think it was faithful to the God of Israel, and they didn't. So they're not prone to keep the peace, and they hated paying the taxes. And Pilate was so much worse than just a standard governor because he hated the Jews sincerely. He would do things like one time he had to build an aqueduct to make their city more Roman and efficient, and he didn't want to take it out of the taxes because that would make him look bad to Caesar getting less taxes. So he broke into their temple and he took the money that they had stored for temple ministry stuff. He did stuff like he would parade through the streets of Israel, pagan Roman gods, just to remind them, hey, you're not in charge. There's actually a different group of people that you answer to. He hated being there. But on this particular Friday, the Jewish people needed him because they wanted to kill Jesus, and they didn't want to just kill him any old way. They wanted to crucify him because he was going around claiming now to be the Messiah, and there's nothing that says you're not the Messiah like dying naked and bloody on a Roman cross. So they come to Pilate early on a Friday morning because that's when the Roman officials did their work and took appointments, and they try to get him to crucify him. And Pilate asked a really basic question. What crime did this guy commit? And the Jewish people say, well, we wouldn't have brought him to you if he wouldn't have committed a crime, which as you can see is a dodge, right? They're trying to stall. They already know what they want. They're just trying to figure out how to get there. And Pilate can smell an internal fight among the Jews. And so he's like, just go take him and judge him yourself. And they're like, We'd love to, but we can't. We can't execute anybody, and we certainly can't crucify anybody. And so Pilate takes Jesus into his chambers and asks him the question you saw last week, "Are you the King of the Jews?" And Jesus answers his question with a question like he does. He says, "Is that your own idea? Or did you hear it from someone else?" And Pilate, who is used to men, used to moments like this, is not used to a man like this. And he says, "Am I a Jew? Y'all are coming at me and they're asking me to kill you. So can you tell me why?" And Jesus responds like this. He says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me." Now, here's the problem with what you just heard. You heard Jesus say, "My kingdom is not of this world." But that's actually not a great translation of this phrase. What he actually says is something more like, "My kingdom is not from this world." And that's when it starts to come into focus. Because we know how the kingdoms of this world work. The kingdom of manipulation and bullying and political strategy and negative campaigning and strong arming and everybody's looking out for themselves. That's how the kingdoms of this world works. And Jesus says, "Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. My kingdom is not from this world, but it is certainly for this world." And then Pilate asked the most important question of his entire life, the one that he's really known for. Jesus says, "Everyone who's on the side of truth listens to me." And Pilate says, "What is truth?" In a question that sounds like it came out last week, the Gospel of John introduces us to Jesus as someone full of both grace and truth. Jesus doesn't just come teaching truth. He is the truth. Pilate, you're looking truth in the face. Jesus says, "You will know the truth and the truth will set you free." But for all intents and purposes on this Friday morning, Jesus, the truth, isn't free. He doesn't look free. But as you look at the story, you start to realize he's the only free person there. Pilate is in between this tension between the religious leaders and his obligations to Caesar. And that's the great irony of this. Truth is staring back at him, not as an abstract idea or a philosophical argument, but it's a person standing in chains on his doorstep. And this is where Pilate gets a little nervous, because he's never met someone like this. He's never seen someone who would be staring certain death in the face and is indifferent. Jesus is not like the Sadducees, he knows, the Jewish people who basically let go of their faith just so they could have power with Rome. He knows them really well. Jesus isn't like that. He's not like the Pharisees who brought him here on this Friday morning, who are not even coming into his palace because they don't want to get unclean by the icky Roman Gentile as they're, you know, trying to stay ceremonial clean for the Passover, even as they're coming to kill God. He's not like any of those groups of people. So Pilate is unnerved. He comes up with a scheme that he can get out of doing what the Jewish people want without causing a riot. So he brings out this terrorist named Barnabas, who was responsible for the deaths of lots of Jewish people. He brings him out with Jesus and he's like, "All right, pick which one goes free." And to his surprise, they pick the guy everybody hates and knows is guilty to go free. So now Pilate's in a bind and he does this. He takes Jesus and he has him flogged. Okay. Now, when you hear that, you have no concept of what that means, but people who first heard it did. A couple of decades ago, when Mel Gibson came out with the movie The Passion of the Christ, everybody in the West was basically like, "God, so violent." I heard people refer to it as the Jesus Chainsaw Massacre. And the reason we thought that way is because we have heard this story so much, we've domesticated it. when we think about this, we think of religious icons or paintings and show Jesus with a halo around his head and maybe a couple of drops of holy blood or something. But Jesus, a flogging, a Roman whip was full of lead and glass and lead bone. People were frequently disemboweled by flogging. In fact, the first century Josephus, a Jewish historian, said he watched that happen with a flogging that he watched the Romans do. The reason the Romans flogged before they crucified was to make sure that the crucifixion was just hours, not days, because they didn't want their Roman soldiers having to be on the clock watching these guys. So Pilate does all but half kill Jesus, brings him back, hoping the crowd's going to be satisfied. But the soldiers don't just flog him, and this is important, because the word that John is going to use to describe the gospel is glory, right? That's the cross, this shameful thing. They strip Jesus naked, and here's what the Roman soldiers do. They twist together a crown of thorns, put it on his head. They clothe him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they slapped him in the face. The point of the cross in the Gospels, it's not just violence. Everybody knows it was violent. The point of the cross was shame. They mocked and shamed our Lord. They dressed him up like a puppet to mock the idea that a carpenter from this armpit in the world could be anything like royalty. And then they touch him, but unlike the other people in the Gospels who touch Jesus in faith and they're healed and set free, they touch him to dehumanize him. They slap him to put him in his place, having no idea he had left his place in heaven to come for them just as much as anybody. I don't know if you've ever been slapped in the face, but this is designed to humiliate, right? It's not a punch. They're letting Jesus know, you are not my equal. And Jesus, true to his word, turns the other cheek. We've already seen just a few chapters earlier, Jesus just speaks a word and everybody falls down. But he remains silent. And then after he's brought to Pilate, and after Pilate shows Jesus to the crowd, dressed and beaten and humiliated, hoping it satisfied their bloodlust, instead this happens. Pilate says to them, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let him know I find no basis for a charge against him. He flogged him without cause." Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, let's all read this together, "Here is the man." Actually, he would have spoken Latin, "Ecce homo," which is the title of many classical paintings about this moment. The Gospel of John's first words are, "In the..." Jesus does seven miracles, or seven signs in the Gospel of John. It's paralleling Genesis. And this moment is doing the same. Here is the new Adam. But unlike the first Adam, Pilate lets us know he's innocent. And the crowd says, "Crucify him." And what they say back actually changes the whole scene. Here it is. The Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." And when Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. Why? You know who claimed to be the Son of God in Pilate's day? Caesar. It was the fastest growing religion in the ancient world was Caesar worship. He told everybody he was the Son of God. He was the King of Kings and the Son of God, Prince of Peace, that's another one. And now when he hears that Jesus isn't just claiming to be, a king of the Jews, some weird intramural title, but claiming to be the Son of God, Pilate knows he's trapped. Because the most important information that we have about Pilate to understand this story is that he got this job from a friend named Aelinius Sejanus. Sejanus was on the Roman council. He was basically co-emperor with Tiberius Caesar for many years. Sejanus also hated the Jews. He designed policies just to tick them off. Sejanus was cruel, ambitious, and connected. And he was in this group, a very tight-knit group, called the Friends of Caesar. That was actually the group's name, Amicus Caesarius. And they were a group of senators and knights and powerful men who had merited the emperor's favor. And About a few years into being on the council and in this group, Friend of Caesar's, it turns out that being almost a co-emperor with Tiberius wasn't enough for Sejanus. And he staged a coup, or he planned a coup. And Caesar heard about it. And on the same day he heard about it, Sejanus was executed. But Sejanus is who got Pilate his job. They were both in the Friends of Caesar group. And now, Pilate knows that his connections are fraying, and he's afraid, because he's heard Jesus might be the Messiah, whatever that means, but this is the first time he's heard he's the Son of God. And when Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid and went back to Jesus and said, "Where did you come from?" And Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power to either free you or crucify you?" And Jesus doesn't answer. Pilate's done this interview hundreds of times. He knows what men who are facing crucifixion are like. They beg for their life. They promise to change. They blame anyone they can. But Jesus doesn't do any of that. Instead, he just stays silent, like a lamb led to slaughter. And Pilate knows he's got to pick between his life and crucifying this guy. And all the Jews know this. And they know his Achilles heel. So they say, when Pilate sets him before them, he said, "If you let this man go," next slide. Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders said, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar." Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Peter, or if you could go back, opposes Caesar, not Peter. When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known the Stone Pavement. It was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about noon. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews, but they shouted, "Take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priest answered. And finally, Pilate handed them over to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus. "If you don't do this, you are no friend of Caesar." So Pilate executes a man he knows is innocent. The religious leaders kill the Messiah that had waited 1,000 years for. And he dies on a shameful cross with the words printed for all to see: "Jesus, King of the Jews." So how did we get here? How did the people of God get to the place where they would willingly kill God? Not just kill him, but kill him by chanting, "We have no king but Caesar." How did Pilate get here? This guy who has all the power in Israel, where he's anxious and willing to sacrifice everything just to keep it. The Gospel of John, for 19 chapters, Jesus has been coming into the world, into people's lives, forcing choices. He is the way, the truth, and the life. There's no way except through him. Some choose to live, some choose to die. And it turns out in the end, this world that God really does love, really does hate him. And before we write this off as a Bible story, pump the brakes and ask yourself, are you sure if you were here on this Friday, you wouldn't have done the same thing? Because remember, a few days earlier, they were yelling, "Hosanna!" Yeah, yeah. Same people. Yeah, yeah. And now, crucify him. Crucify him. And this is where things start getting more personal. This whole scene sounds so familiar to me. Every politician loves to quote Jesus in John 8, "You shall know the truth and the truth will set you free." But they strike more of a tone of Pilate. And it's not just politicians. If you wear the name Christian, that means little Christ. It means you're trying to live a life that's worthy of this man. I want you to think about the way you try to control the world around you. The people around you. And if we were sitting down just one-on-one, I'd say, listen, it's really important you're honest with yourself about this. Anxiety is like through the roof in America right now. And I know a lot of that's screen time and the stuff we've talked about. I get that. But I think part of the reason we're so anxious is because we have mistaken ourselves for God. We want to be in control way more than we actually are. And if that resonates with you at all, then listen to this thing Jesus says right before he's executed to Pilate. Pilate comes in and says, "Where did you come from?" But Jesus gives him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have the power to free you or to crucify you?" And Jesus answered, I love this so much, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." Pilate goes in to face Jesus. He's so sure of himself. "Do you know I'm the most powerful person in this city?" Pilate, who had just asked Jesus what is truth and stormed off before he can answer, he's going to tell Jesus what truth is. "The truth is, Jesus, guys like me have power and guys like you don't. Guys like me decide what happens to guys like you. Look, you seem harmless enough, but I think you're just a dreamy-eyed Galilean who needs to wake up and face reality, my reality. You have to accept the truth, and it's that the world is run by people like me. And they will run over every time people like you. And if you'll admit that and just say, I'm not a king, I got a little too big for my britches, I'll let you go free. But if you keep challenging this power, I have no choice, and I will, because I have the power to crucify you." This is Pilate witnessing to Jesus the gospel of power. And Jesus tells Pilate, I love this so much, "Pilate, you are not in charge of me. You are not in charge of my destiny. You are not in charge of my fate." Jesus and Pilate represent two very different worlds. Two different gospels. The word gospel was actually, before it was a Christian word, it was a Roman word, euangelion. It meant good news about the Roman Empire expanding. Hey, come into a city near you, and yeah, there'll be lots of peace and new roads and aqueducts and, you know, a couple thousand crosses right along the side of the road, but hey, it works. From one perspective, Jesus is being tried in Pilate's court right now. But from the perspective of John, the whole world is being tried in the court of God. So you've probably heard, and if you haven't, listen, your whole life has been affected by these people. They're called the masters of suspicion. Sigmund Freud, Karl Marx, Friedrich Nietzsche. Last few hundred years, they have dominated the Western world. And all three of them were suspicious of the same thing. Agape, unconditional Christian love. They all three looked at the world and, you know, Marx said, hey, it's not about love. It's about money. That's what makes the world go round. And people hide behind that, but it's about money. Freud looked at it and he said, it's not about love. It's all about sex. And Nietzsche said, it's not about love. It's about power. You know Nietzsche? Pastor's kid, pretty smart guy. He hated the New Testament, except for this story. He said it was the only moment of nobility in the whole New Testament. Because Nietzsche said Pilate won this argument. Listen, if you want to know what truth is, there is no such thing as truth, Nietzsche says. But the closest thing to truth is that power enforced by violence is the closest thing there is to ultimate truth. And for those under the spell of the ruler of this world, it's simply the way the world is. You can resist if you want, but in the end, you're dead. And when you're dead, you're dead. It is not an exaggeration to say the last 30 years, an entire generation of students have been trained in this view. Through Nietzsche and then through his intellectual descendant, Michel Foucault, they found power everywhere, especially places where we thought it was not, that you were kind of safe from it. Places like art and architecture and family and friendship and not least in religion. And all those places, they said it basically, the only thing that's real is the naked quest for domination. And that may sound like a lot to you, so let me just explain it this way. When was the last time you agreed with a ref? We are so suspicious of anyone in power. From preachers to presidents to mayors to moms, this world is just one big power trip. Now listen, that's in the air. It's kind of natural and normal. Let me explain this a little bit more, because this is a big idea and the kingdom of God stands against it. This is the way the kingdoms of this world have always worked. In book three of the Republic, Plato, thousands of years ago, really smart guy, put out there what he calls the noble lie. This is how kingdoms of this world operate, the noble lie. It is a lie that is meant to maintain order, ensure that rulers rule and everyone else obeys. A version of this is in the Gospel of John. You saw it already in John 18. High priest said it was good for one man to die for the people. If we need to keep peace, we'll use a scapegoat to do it. Jesus will do it. That's a noble lie. Plato's noble lie was the myth of metals, is what it's called. And thousands of years ago, Plato came out with this idea that when the gods made human beings, some of them he made with gold. Those are the rulers, the people who are supposed to be in charge, the elite and very special. Some of them he made with silver. Those are kind of the government, the mid-level managers, those kind of people. And he made the rest of us with bronze and clay. Those are the people who are supposed to be slaves. Plato was pretty big on there are different groups of people from birth, the way the gods made them. That's his noble lie. It was meant to maintain order and get people to obey the rules. It runs through our day. It is the origin of the modern practices of dishonest marketing, political propaganda, spin, alternative facts, post-truth. It's the world of Jack Nicholson and the Few Good Men. You can't handle the truth. That's the noble lie. It is the strategy of Satan from the beginning. But here's what I want you to see. God never lies. This is a recapitulation of Genesis, right? And in Genesis, Adam and Eve, Satan, he's the father of lies, Jesus tells us. That's exactly what he does. From the beginning, that's his native language. He lies and lies, and God never does. God tells Adam and Eve the truth. He tells them hard things, uncomfortable things, things that may cause them to wonder, why is he acting the way he is? Why did he put the tree in the garden in the first place? But he gives them the truth unvarnished. He never lies to Adam and Eve. And in the dealings with Satan and Adam and Eve, we see one of the defining characteristics of the kingdom of God and the kingdoms of this world. What St. Augustine, smartest guy in Christian history, said, basically the big difference between the city of God and the city of man is the city of God is built on the love of God and love of others, and the city of man is built on the love of self. And you can tell all the noble lies you want to ignore that reality, but that is the reality. And it is this distinguishing thing. There is truth and trust in the city of God, and there is deception and division in the second. And so the question for us today, and this is a huge question to build your life on, who's right in this story? Is it Pilate and Nietzsche? Or is it Jesus? And it's a big question because there's a little Pilate in all of us. There's a Pilate that wants us to take control. And if you do this, and we are so tempted to do this, if you're always fighting to get in control, stay in control, remain in control, we're inviting great anxiety into our lives. Because if you live that way, you're always going to fear losing control. If you're out of control, you're always going to fear not being able to get in control. This view on life opens us up to so much anxiety and fear. It will be the way you track your life. And the people in your life, the people that you love, they won't feel loved. What they feel is controlled and manipulated. And the irony is, every one of us has some God-given control. You have dominion. You were made in the image of God. There are arenas and sectors in your life that you have some say, some limited say in what happens. You're called to be a good steward of your authority, but you're not responsible for controlling outcomes. How could you be? You're not God. You don't have all authority. You know the biggest problem we have? It's the same problem Pilate had. We think God can't do anything. That if anything happens, it's going to be on us. And that's a miserable, anxious-filled way to live. And take it from our Lord. He did not live that way. You know, throughout this series, I've thought a lot about Peter, who denied Jesus. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, we looked at that. And Peter is going to be reinstated, restored. Jesus himself is going to do some cool stuff in the Gospel of John in just a couple of weeks. We'll see it. But years later, Peter, who's standing at a distance watching all this, seeing Jesus beaten, humiliated, mocked, and yet full of peace. Decades later, Peter is writing as an old man, one of the churches he helped to plant. And he gives us the secret. A secret to this kind of life. A life full of peace, even in the middle of storms. He says, cast all your anxiety on him. Because he really does care for you. Because Peter knows who's in charge of the universe and how good he is. He knows there is a real power in this world, and it's a power that never loses. So if you go the Nietzsche Pilate route, let me just warn you, this is where it ends. This is where it always ends. You know, Pilate lived to rule another day. For 2 more years, he ruled as the governor of Israel. And then a riot happened. And Caesar was done with Pilate not being able to manage his territory. And so he called for his resignation and called for him to come back to Rome. And on his way back to Rome, Pilate, unsure of what would happen, thought Caesar would probably execute him. Pilate decided to take his own life. Pilate wanted to be important, and today he is only known as a footnote in this story of this man he dismissed. And because I can see Pilate in my mirror, there's part of me that wants to shake him and say, Pilate, do you not realize what you're doing? You want to be a big deal. You want to have little boys named after you for thousands of years, but that doesn't happen for you, Pilate. Pilate, you're almost unknown except for this guy. You wanted to be famous and have glory, and this guy that you're dismissing, this guy is worshiped today by billions of people. They name their children after characters in his story. And Pilate, you're the name of a gas station. Jesus is offering a stark alternative. A life full of love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and self-control. And that is available to anyone who puts their faith in him right now. Okay, so cast our anxieties. That's what we did just a few moments ago in prayers of the people. And now one of our shepherds is going to come up and close us with that prayer for this week.